Welcome to a weekly review of North Dakota's legislative news. Now, here's your host, Dave Thompson, with North Dakota Legislative Review.
And hello, I'm Dave Thompson with North Dakota Legislative Review. It was the first veto of the session, and now the Senate has voted to override Governor Burgum's veto. The bill doubles driver's license fees from $15 to $30, and the Senate voted 41-4 to override it today. The House must still vote to override it. That'll come probably in the next few weeks or so. Also, the Sunday opening law has been signed into law by Governor Burgum. It takes effect August 1st, and that means retail stores in North Dakota can be open before noon on Sunday. That's the last vestige of the blue law. It's gone. And also, there was an oil tax measure that the Senate has acted on. There was some misplaced money concerning the allocation of oil taxes, and lawmakers are working to correct what some perceive as an error. Schools and water projects are going to get money they say was lost because of the error. This week, a plan was put in place to repay millions of dollars misallocated over the past decade. A certain percentage of oil extraction taxes were supposed to go to the Common Schools Trust Fund and also the Resources Trust Fund every year. As political correspondent Chad Mira reports, a new amendment proposed this week will make sure that money is repaid.
For the past 2 weeks, lawmakers have grappled with how to handle funding that was never put in its appropriate spots.
It took a long time to get this where it was. It's going to take a while going back.
This week, Senate Majority Leader Rich Warner proposed a plan to repay the funds. It had been estimated as much as $200 million was never paid to the Common Schools Trust Fund and the Resources Trust Fund.
When it comes to putting the principal back into the Common Schools Trust Fund, that's important because that earns more earnings as we go forward, and it's a constitutional fund.
So here's the plan. At the end of the next biennium, the state will move more than $64 million into the Common Schools Trust Fund. Repaying the Resources Trust Fund will go a little differently. An extra 0.5% will be added to the fund each year until the missing $128 million is repaid. Then that 0.5% will stop. This way, the state can still invest in other things it needs.
General fund, balancing, taking care of priorities, so we would be short of that.
The Finance and Taxation Committee has given the idea a do pass.
My personal feelings is that it's an unnecessary amendment.
But not the chairman, Senator Dwight Cook.
If you're going to look back, I think the amendment he brought is the best way to do it. It's still just basically a shell game in my mind. It's taking money from this pocket, putting it into another pocket, but if we're going to do it, that's the best way to do it.
Now the entire Senate will have a chance to weigh in.
We're now joined by Bismarck Republican Representative Mike Nathy. He is a member of the House Appropriations Committee. Senator Representative Nathy, thank you very much for being
thanks.
Here.
Thanks for having me here today.
All right, what do you think are the big issues that are at loggerheads between the House and Senate right now?
I think, well, as we speak today, the biggest one right now that it's kind of reared its head is the difference in the pay package. The House is at 2-2 for the state employees, and the Senate is at 2-3. And there's been ongoing negotiations, but as far as I know, as of this afternoon, both sides are dug in pretty hard right now. So I think that's going to play out for a little while yet. So I think we're going to be passing budgets out of both chambers, out of both Senate and House appropriations, with their own benefit packages. And those negotiations will take place here in the next days or even weeks as we go forward. So that could come down to almost to the end of the session before that is figured out.
So that's going to be a lot of conference committees, perhaps.
Could be a lot of conference committees. It could be a lot of meetings with just the the leaders will meet. But once they do decide, we will have to have conference committees on all those budgets with House and Senate appropriators to put in the correct package that we agree upon.
On the 2-2 plan, you have a minimum, there's a floor, correct?
2% for the first year, 2% for the second, and the Senate is 2% for the first and 3% for the second year.
I thought there was a money, too.
I know there was an offer or there was an option about maybe putting $100 extra on top for extra $100 a month extra for the employees as we go along. So, but again, we're at 2-2, and we'll see how that plays out.
So let me ask you from your perspective, what's happened with the Theodore Roosevelt Library?
Well, actually, I think the Theodore Roosevelt Library is in a little better shape today, Dave, than it was maybe a couple months ago. You know, when we first heard that idea, we were kind of blindsided a little bit. We didn't hear anything until the governor's speech about it. It's been a couple months now. I think a lot of my legislative colleagues have had a chance to do some homework, have had a chance to get kind of up to speed on what it means and how much it costs and everything else as we go forward. So I still think it has a long road to go as far as getting enough support in either chamber, but it seems to me that is moving in the right direction, and I do think, I've been asked several times if I think this is going to be done. I do think it'll be done. I think we'll see an amendment maybe day 70, 72, whenever we get there. But I think it will be done. But we still have a little bit of work to go yet.
So you're convinced that it's a worthwhile project?
I think it is a worthwhile project. It's a big idea, and I think we need at times to take that leap with big ideas, especially for the state of North Dakota. And let's try to raise our prominence, our standing a little bit higher in this country. And I think it's an idea worth doing. And it's a $50 million set aside for an endowment. The supporters will raise another $100 million for the library itself. To have a presidential library in our state, I think, is a very big deal, and I fully support that.
Medora the right place, then?
Medora is the right place. I mean, as you know, the TR story is he spent a good part of his life out there, and I think it fits exactly perfectly well.
Let me ask you about another thing that he proposed, and that was moving people out of the New England prison, moving the women out of there to Bismarck, to the MRCC, moving the MRCC inmates to Jamestown. That didn't get a lot of traction, at least hasn't so far.
It hasn't in the House so far. Again, that was one of those items that we didn't know about either until the State of the State address in January. MRCC is in my district, so it does affect us directly. The people, obviously, out in New England, it is a huge deal for those people out there. So the Senate has that issue right now, and again, I think that will be one of those issues that will come down in the final weeks, too, to see what we do. But right now, my feeling in the House, there's not the desire to do that.
But again, you really can never say never until the gavel falls.
Absolutely
at the end
right.
Session. Yeah,
never say never. Even with bills that do die, no bill dies until we actually sign to die and leave for the day. So,
One thing that was talked about a lot too is consolidation of information technology services. That didn't seem to get a lot of traction either. Where is that at? You
know? Well, I know there's a couple, we're doing a pilot project with a couple different departments as far as that's concerned. We're not doing with all of them. I think there's been maybe four, five, six different departments that are going to try this, and we'll see how it works this session. And if it works out well, we'll do it next session. But we're just kind of dipping our toe in the water on that issue.
So you didn't want to take the entire apple, but a bite at the apple might be
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, let's see how it works out. Let's see how, when you consolidate, can we save some FTEs? Can we save money and the economy of scale? So I think it's good to do a little test pilot project, so because it is a big undertaking to do it.
One issue that was really prominent last session doesn't seem to be around very much anymore, but I've been asking people about it. And that's the idea of going to self-insurance for state employees.
Yeah, that's been a big topic for the last couple sessions, by the way. And no, we have not heard much about that at all. And I guess leave sleeping dogs lie right now. So,
I've heard that there might be a study coming.
Yeah, there's a work on a study, and it certainly doesn't hurt. To see how that's going to affect our state employees, to see if we save any money, if we can get even better benefits than we have already in our plan.
And just to go back a few years, it was tried in North Dakota, and for some reason it didn't work. But there seems to be some feeling, at least among some quarters, that it can work this time.
Yeah, and I've talked to some of my colleagues have pretty good-sized businesses, and they do self-insurance sort of things, and they talk glowingly about it. They talk about the amount of money they can save and not lose the services either. So, but you know, when you're looking at doing it for the state, that is a pretty big mountain to climb. Something like that. So I think a study is very appropriate to do, and let's make sure we have all our bases covered before we go down that road.
And let's mention, too, that you were the main sponsor of the Prairie Dog Bill.
Yes.
Which, again, was referred to in the Senate debate today. But Prairie Dog, too, that bonding is kind of in limbo right now.
It is. You know, that bill, 2275, died in the House a couple days ago. That was originally part of Prairie Dog when we were working on it. We were working on Prairie Dog and Prairie Dog 2 since last May. And it was such a big bill. It was such a big infrastructure bill that we decided last fall we had to split these into two different bills. And they both stand on their own, as you know. And I think the problem in the House, it may have been a little bit too rich. Half $1 billion in the fund. I know our leader, Chet Pollard, is supportive of a bonding bill, I think, but maybe at a little of a lower dollar amount. So there are talks going on right now. Let's kind of come up with another version here that everybody can live with. So, because we do have a bonding program in place that's been in there. All we basically did is put it on steroids and add more money to it because we have a huge infrastructure need out in the state. And that was the main reason why we had prairie dog come up. And this bonding bill is just another tool that the communities in North Dakota can use to help build out the infrastructure. And by the way, with a good bonding bill can also help save some interest on those bonds, thus help saving some property tax to the people of North Dakota.
But it is true that for a while, the term bonding was almost, oh, please don't bring that up.
Yeah, it is, and especially with some of the more veteran legislators than me, even the, I've had a conversation with them, and they're very leery about it because they were here during those bonding days, and it didn't turn out quite so well. Maybe younger legislators who haven't been there as long, even with, you know, I don't have that history, I don't have that knowledge, and I haven't been burned by that. But I do think bonding is good when you use it within reason and to a certain point, and I do think it's a good tool for our communities to use.
They used to be called Christmas tree bills at
yes,
one point.
Yes, yes. And I think there'll be a couple Christmas tree bills at the end of this session. I think OMB is traditionally a Christmas tree bill, and I think you'll see the Commerce bill be a Christmas tree bill. I carried the Commerce bill in the House, and I wouldn't doubt if we see some other items tagged on that as we go along.
I know the TR library is probably in the Commerce budget, but some other things there too?
Well, you know, you have to realize nothing was in the budget, right? Because we had just our budget, and the governor's issues were his ideas were on the side. We had to put them in the bill, but the governor had proposed that we put the TR Library in Commerce. We had some of these career centers that were originally in Commerce bill, and we did not put that in either. And that was about $30 million, and we had decided not to do that either in the House. Now, I think the Senate's thinking about putting some of that back in. So
now, the career centers are like the Career Academy in Bismarck.
Correct,
which is
yep. It's patterned
Bismarck
after
public
that.
Schools, yes.
Yeah, it's patterned after that. And that money would give schools money to help bring in private businesses to come in and help set up a career academy where they can learn to do maybe blue-collar type jobs and those sorts of things. And it's been highly successful here in Bismarck, and Bismarck State College has been truly the model that everybody is trying to pattern themselves after.
I know that Fargo is trying, and that's through the North Dakota College of Science.
Correct. Yep.
As well.
Yep. And the House decided not to fund that because Bismarck State College did it here on their own. They did it within their budget, and they went out and got private sector investment to come in and do it. And that was the House's stance, was like, you know what, it worked here. The Fargo schools have a lot of great businesses out there that could step up and also help invest in that, along with the Bismarck Fargo public schools and their budget, and they can make it work that way too. So.
And since you mentioned Fargo, I do have to ask the question because, you know, we're facing flooding issues again in North Dakota, which is almost an annual thing. And of course, you've got the Fargo Diversion has been asking for more money. At the same time, also, a Red River Valley water supply project in case you have drought, which
right.
does happen.
Yeah.
And it's odd to think of the Red River flooding when you're maybe in drought in a few more years. Where do you see that going?
Well, we had discussions this morning on actually both of those issues in the Red River Valley, looking at taking the water out of the Missouri here, just north up by Washburn in that area, and then sending it out east. A couple different ideas there. One would be just to treat it, put it in a pipe, and send it all the way out to Grand Forks and have a T and send it north and send it south. The other way, which I think is a more preferable way by the Water Commission, is to have the water treated to a certain point and then sent out and then dumped into the Cheyenne River, and then that would convey it over to Fargo and take it from there. But there are lawsuits that you have to keep in mind. It's Canada we have to keep in mind because the water's got to be treated to a certain point. So we've been having those discussions between those two issues. As far as the Fargo flood diversion, we've had a lot of discussions on that, and I think we're going to have a lot more before. That's going to be one of, I think, the last bills we kick out in the House appropriations because that has a lot of moving parts to it. We've had a lot of discussions as far as you know, the money for it. I think there is a desire within our committee that's looking at this to do it, but we want to make sure our expectations are met. And we talked about putting some conditions on some of the items that we want to do. So if we're going to give them legislative intent, if we're going to go down that road, that's fine, but we want certain things that we want met. Because a lot of my colleagues I'm hearing who have a little bit of a problem with the Fargo diversion after all the money we've given them, have a hard time looking at it and saying, well, why isn't the interior flood protection of Fargo done? But yet they're spending all this money on someplace else, or they're sitting on this money. So we're going to, I think, put a little bit more accountability in there, so we can explain to our colleagues why we're doing what we're doing.
And that's some of the conditions that might be.
That's some of the conditions. Yeah, and we're working on those conditions right now. And we asked the State Water Commission if we put some conditions on, how would they feel about it? Of course, they said fine. It just depends what those conditions are. But I think we'll be able to come up with a package that everybody can live with. So. And you know, let's face it, we all realize that they need protection out in Fargo and in the Red River Valley. We just have to make sure that we do it smart and do it responsibly And, you know, we need to get votes to pass a bill. And so if we can put some conditions on there that make my colleagues comfortable with it, then it's a little easier way to pass the bill and pass the money.
And it was Will Rogers, I believe, who said, you know, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting.
Exactly,
so
right.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Another thing that has been talked about and really hasn't got a lot of traction yet is changing the governance in higher education. The bill that's on the table right now is expanding it to a 15-member board. And there is still some pushback from the governor, who wants at least a two-board situation, one for the two universities and the other for the other colleges. And the chairman of the Board of Higher Education, who said he was not speaking as the chairman of the board, but as a member of the task force, he said that the one board expanded is kind of like two board light. And I'm thinking that bill's in the Senate, right?
Correct. It passed the Senate. And it's right now currently in the House, in the House Judiciary. And they've had the hearing on it and just waiting to take action on that bill.
But you will have to weigh in on appropriations too.
We most likely will have to, yes. And you know, I was on the Higher Ed Task Force board. We started last January. And when I got on that board, I was of the mindset that we needed to look hard at the having boards. And really, quite frankly, I was going in thinking, we need to do a multi-level board. As the progress, as we progressed through, I really did kind of change my mind because I could see some pitfalls in having a two board, pitfalls having a three board system. And so the current bill that they have right now is a bill I had made up, which we had put on the side in case the two board proposal failed, and it did fail in the House. The Senate took it, and they added a couple little things to it. But everything in the bill is pretty much, a lot of those are the findings we had out of that governor's task force, as far as adding more members, as far as having a 1 6-year term. We found out during our deliberations that was probably the best way versus 2 4-year terms. So I do think there's a lot of support in the House to make the tweaks to the current board.
How about spending levels for higher education?
Well, we've also had that in our section, and I think we're on board. Obviously, you know, higher ed would like to have more money than we're giving them, which I can't blame them, but we're definitely going to be funding them at a much better level than we were last session, because last session we had such a lot of financial difficulties, but I think we're going to be able to do pretty well for them this session.
And you have a bill that allocate some money for research.
Yeah, right? House Bill 1333, or as known, everybody calls it the LIFT Bill, Legacy Investment Fund for Technology. And it really is for businesses, for research companies that are right near the goal line, that are about ready to bring that research to commercialization. And that's what this is for. This bill is not research for research sake. It's to bring it to the private sector. And originally we had $25 million of legacy money in it. It went to the Senate. It's now at $15 million, and it's been able to stay pretty much intact. And I've been really surprised, Dave, how much support I've gotten from the private sector and from other players. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that bill go through the Senate. This Senate Appropriations has it. They're pretty much done with it, but I think they're going to hold on to it for a little bit to see how everything else plays out.
And the one that Senator Sorvog, the $45 million, yeah, which was a $100 million ask to begin with, yeah, that's no longer.
No, it's no longer. And, you know, it complements 1333 very well, but in the House, I hate to say, but in the House, research for research sake doesn't really play too well. So, and we've been down that road, and we have a lot of other research programs going on right now. The Ag Extension budget we have has a lot of research money in it. NDSU does a lot of research in ag. UND does a lot of research with drones and atmospheric weather, that kind of stuff. So we have a lot of research programs going on. But I do think we may see some version of the research bill that died in the House either come back this session or most likely next session.
Okay, so there's at least some recognition of some value in some research.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned drones because, you know, that was an interesting hearing that I attended in the Senate Appropriations Committee about drones, and that seems to be kind of a hidden gem out there that could really, really, and I don't mean to use the pun, but it could take off.
Yeah, it was in the Commerce budget, and we had a lot of hearings on the House side about it. And you know, when you go out to the Valley, you go out to Fargo and Grand Forks and Grand Sky Park out by the Minot Grand Forks Air Force Base, it is absolutely fascinating what's going on out there, the technology and how they use the drones and all the current possibilities. You know, we have the drone park out there. The $30 million for UAS will help us do beyond visual line of sight throughout the whole state of North Dakota, which will bring a lot of benefits to the energy industry out in western North Dakota. They can monitor pipelines from the drones. They don't have to be always watched by a chase plane now. They can be watched from far distances. They can download data, those sorts of things. Plus, we also have the number one UAS test site in the country. There's 7 UAS test sites designated by the federal government. We were able to put more funding back in that this session. And it's really exciting about what can really happen out there. We were out there at Grand Sky. They're talking about NATO coming out there with these drones. They're talking about corporations. Northrop Grumman has put in over $40 million in their facility out there. And there's more and more people to come. So it is really quite exciting. And I really think we have a real opportunity to develop that third leg of the stool of industry in this state, oil, energy, and I think we have a real chance with ag, technology right now to do it.
Great. Well, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Representative Mike Nathan from Bismarck. While lawmakers were at the Capitol this week, some of their districts were dealing with dangerous flood conditions. Governor Burgum and a couple of District 39 lawmakers went to McKenzie County to survey the damage. Political correspondent Chad Mira caught up with one of the lawmakers earlier this week.
People all over the state dealing with flooding. One of those districts is District 39 up in the northwest part of the state. Joining me now is Representative Keith Kempenick from that district. Representative, thanks for your time today.
You
were up in the area this morning surveying some of the damage away from the Capitol. What did you see?
Well, what we did, we got up there about 9 o'clock and we had to actually go to Sydney because 200 at the time when we got up there was still underwater. And so what we did is Highway Patrol came down and then we, by van, we drove up to East Fairview and had a meeting and listened to some of the folks that are impacted by this. And then we went for a tour. We drove up to the confluences and seen where the ice jam is. And that's basically what the problem is why it backed up so bad. And then we went down on 200 and looked at where the farmsteads are underwater and stuff on it, and it was still, actually the water was still running over 200 yet, but we did drive along through it and stuff, but you could feel it. The current is pretty strong, and that's one of the things that happened, that all the comments were that they were talking 30 mile an hour plus river flow, which is just unreal, you know, but when you're actually looking at it when it was crossing the road, you could see that that water was really moving. And then again, it turns into that they didn't have time to evacuate much other than themselves. So there's some pretty good, it's really a devastated area that got inundated by this.
Last we heard, there were about 100 or so people who have been displaced because of this flooding. What kind of resources are available to them right now?
Well, that's what we're working on right now. The governor was up and there's some things that we can do, I guess, basically right now. And that was one of the talk is because Montana is being flooded too, and with what has gone down south in Nebraska and Kansas and eastern South Dakota and Iowa, that we're hoping that we can get a presidential disaster and that kind of starts things flowing a little better. But right now, I think what's going on is the guard the general was with too on it, and so I think the DES and the guard are probably headed up that way here as we speak. So that's the immediate response, and I think what's going to have to happen is the emergency management up out of McKenzie County is going to have to start getting some numbers put together and then see what kind of response we need to do and stuff on it. But there is some things we got in some of these funds that we do have sitting here are for these types of disasters, and that's so we got to look at that and see, because we do have some resources. So.
Yeah, and Highway 200 has been closed down now for most of the week. You mentioned, though, it looks like there's been at least a little bit of improvement of the water receding in that area.
Yeah. Well, like I said, when the ice jam was right at the confluences, and when it hit the solid ice of the Missouri River, it just stopped. It's moved around the bend a little bit, about a quarter mile, but it's still backing up water. And truthfully, they've had flood warnings down there. I know in NOAA down around that Billings area on the Yellowstone that there's a lot of water still moving through yet and stuff on it. And I think it all, like up there, they really didn't have much snow. The snow is pretty much gone, so it's all coming from the south is what it is. So thanks.
Well, Representative Kempenick, thanks for your time. We're wishing
everyone
a speedy recovery.
Yeah, it does. It tugs at your heartstrings when you see that and stuff up there. So thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks.
And Chad joins us now in studio to talk about the week ahead. Mm-hmm. As you heard Representative Nathy say, looks like there could be loggerheads on pay raises for state employees.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear his perspective on it. Right now, like he was saying, the House has a 2% raise each year. The Senate wants 2% the first year, 3% raises the second year.
They both agree on that first year, so that 1% difference, you know, in the grand scheme of thing, it's probably not the largest fiscal impact to the states that they'll be debating, but both sides seem to be planting their feet in, and we'll see where they end up. It's certainly going to require a little more debate, it sounds like.
So if they pass their budgets with their pay plans in them, we could see 40-plus conference committees.
No kidding, because they're going to have to go back to the drawing table, basically, and then depending where it lands, it'll kind of have a little bit of a cannonball effect going down the road.
So what else are you watching this upcoming week?
Well, I think some interesting things we've been hearing about, you know, of course, we've been talking about the legacy fund earnings a lot all session, and we've been hearing some more momentum for this idea of lawmakers want to set specific things for the legacy funds to be used for in the future. So buckets, as Senator Warner would call them, similar to how the oil extraction taxes work. You know, they have a certain percentage goes to this fund, certain percentage to this fund. They want to do something similar perhaps with the legacy fund, so we don't always have this debate every session about what are we going to do with all these earnings.
I suppose these buckets will pale in comparison to what the legacy fund is earning. Sorry I had to do that, but you know, that's one issue. But you know, the hidden things about research money for the university system and then what's going to happen with governance, that could be interesting over the next few weeks.
Yeah, there are still a few things, the governance task force recommendations, we don't know where that's going to land still. There's still a lot of things that need to be ironed out here, so we're going to have a lot of debates on some big issues that we've been covering for a month or so now.
Absolutely, and we'll continue to cover them.
Mm-hmm. Will do.
All right, thank you very much for joining us. I'm Dave Thompson. This has been North Dakota Legislative Review.